Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Gunishvavishyate ceto. Gunaschetasi cha prajaha. Jivasya deha ubhayam. Gunascheto maratmana. Guneshvavishyate ceto. Gunaschetasi cha prajaha. Jivasya deha ubhayam. Gunascheto maratmana. Cheta, the mind. Gunaha, the sense objects. Chetasi, in the mind. Cha, also. Enter. It's interesting here with Cheta. This often has different meanings. Cheta can mean the mind, can mean the heart, can mean the consciousness, used in these different ways. So it's saying how like the jiva becomes kind of completely absorbed in these things, even so much so that consciousness becomes wrapped up in the sense objects. And also the word guna is often, strictly speaking, the word guna means rope, and refers to also the modes of material nature, and in this instance it's being used to refer to the sense objects. So again, pointing out how the jiva becomes bound up by the sense objects. Praja, my dear sons, jivasya, of the living entity, deha, the outward body, existing as a designation. Upayam, both of these. Gunaha, the sense objects. Cheta, the mind. Mat Atmana, having me as the Supreme Soul. Try again. Having me as the Supreme Soul. Translation. My dear sons, the mind has a natural proclivity to enter into the material sense objects, and similarly, the sense objects enter into the mind. But both this material mind and the sense objects are merely designations that cover the spirit soul, who is part and parcel of me. Responsively, please. My dear sons, the mind has a natural proclivity to enter into the material sense objects. And similarly, the sense objects enter into the mind. But both this material mind and the sense objects are merely designations that cover the spirit soul, who is part and parcel of me. So this is where Krishna actually starts to, or Hamsa avatar actually starts to instruct the four Kumaras and Lord Brahma, and answer the question that the Kumaras asked of Lord Brahma. Does anyone remember the question? What did the four Kumaras ask Lord Brahma? I think they already knew who Lord Brahma was, because he's their father. It'd be pretty dumb if they asked him, "Who are you?" What did they ask Lord Brahma? Kind of. They were asking, what was the ultimate goal of yoga, and how is it that, you know, the sense object, the mind enters into the sense objects, the sense objects enter into the mind, how to become free of these things. 6:17, I think it is. Yeah. He says, "Oh Lord, people's minds are naturally attracted to material sense objects, and similarly, the sense objects in the form of desire enter within the mind. Therefore, how can a person who desires liberation, who desires to cross over the activities of sense gratification, destroy this mutual relationship between the sense objects and the mind? Please explain this to us." And as we understand, Lord Brahma couldn't answer that question. Why? Do you remember? Yeah, because he was engaged in the acts of creation, therefore he was he became excessively absorbed in these acts of creation, therefore this affected his consciousness, so he couldn't. It's just like that example Prabhupada gives of a young boy who was eating lots of sweets, and his mother didn't want him to eat sweets, so he took him to Mahatma Gandhi and asked, "Gandhiji, you please tell him not to eat sweets." So then Mahatma Gandhi said, "Well, come back in 1 week and then I'll tell him." So she did. And she came back in 1 week and then Mahatma Gandhi said, "Don't eat sweets, they're bad for you." And then she said, "But Gandhiji, why didn't you tell me this a week ago?" He said, "Because a week ago I was eating sweets too." So because he was absorbed in that, he couldn't really give instruction. So the same for Lord Brahma, because he's absorbed in the mode of passion, because he's actually involved in the sense objects like that, he couldn't actually give this instruction because he didn't know the answer. So we see here from about verse 21 onwards, the Lord starts to he doesn't actually, like we're saying, he doesn't actually start the instruction here till this verse, but from verse 21 onwards, he's kind of testing the Kumaras out and pointing out to them, because the first thing they say to him is, "Who are you?" Which is very interesting. Madhvacharya points out in the purport to the previous verse that actually their question was meaningless, because they could see their father, who they understood who their father was. They understood the greatness of their father. And they saw their father offered obeisances to Lord Hansa and worshipped his lotus feet. So obviously they could see that this is a very, very elevated person. It wasn't ordinary. Yet we see in verse 22, it's kind of very interesting, is because the Lord, he didn't address them as dwijas or anything like that. He addressed the Kumaras as vipra. So vipra means learned. So he's having a bit of a dig at them because, based on their question, they're asking, "Who are you?" And he wanted to point out that this, we see in verses 22, 23, 24, he points out this was actually a meaningless inquiry. Because first off he says, because as Madhvacharya is saying, is they could see that he was obviously someone very elevated, because the greatest personality in the universe, the greatest material personality in the universe, worships Lord Hansa. So Lord Brahma understood who it was, but the Kumaras didn't. Yet they're presenting themselves as being, learned. And we see that Lord Hansa actually points out that, based on their question, "Who are you?" you're not actually very learned, because you should understand this, just based on the behavior of a great personality. And because you see, when a great personality does something, it's noteworthy. And Lord Brahma is not some ordinary personality. He's actually the greatest material personality in this universe. He's the head of the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya. He's the creator of the universe. He's a Mahajan. He's actually, an extraordinarily spiritually advanced personality. So, just by seeing his behavior, just like, when Prabhupada was present, devotees would see him do things and they would follow, because they understood Prabhupada was a significant personality, therefore he would do things because they were important to do. Just like he would chant, he would rise early in the morning, he would, translate books, etc., etc. All the things he did were significant. So in the same way, Lord Brahma, because of his position as a great personality, the fact that he's worshipping Hansa means this is significant. But they didn't see the significance of that. And then we see in verse 22, the Lord, first off, he takes this query, "Who are you?" And based on that, he proves that he's not a Jiva. Just with his answer he gives there, he says, "Well, I'm not a Jiva, because if I'm a Jiva, it means I'm the same as you. And if I'm the same as you, what's the significance of your inquiry? It's meaningless." Which is a very interesting point. And then in verse 24, he goes on to point out that he defeats the idea that he's not the body. And then you may remember how he said, "Well, if you actually think that I'm the body, then instead of asking me who I am, you should have asked, who are you five? Because the body's made of five elements." And then he also negates the idea that all the bodies are the same, etc., like that. So he says, "Well, I'm not a jiva, I'm not the body." Then in verse 24, it's very interesting, because he addresses this, I guess you could say, the agnostic understanding of that you actually can't understand Krishna, and that, because agnostics are interesting, because they don't really believe or disbelieve in God. They accept there's a God, but they don't. It's kind of really a sort of non-committal type of approach. Yet they feel that God created the universe, then he just went away and rested, and is not involved in the creation at all. But we see that Krishna clearly points out in the Gita, he says, "Maya tatamidam sarvam jagadvyaktamurtina mastani sarvabhutani na chaham teshu vastita," that by me, in my impersonal energy, that this entire creation is I pervade the entire creation. "All things rest in me, but I do not rest in them." So he's pointing out that everything is intimately connected with him through his energies. So, like in verse 24, that the Lord points that out, that some people feel that I am separate from everything, but actually that's not the fact, because everything is directly connected with me. So he's giving them a clearer understanding of the notion of Godhead, so they can get a very clear understanding of who it is they're speaking with. And we see that Krishna does the same thing to Arjuna in a more simplified way in the Bhagavad Gita. He very clearly helps Arjuna to understand who he is, that he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he shows him his universal form. We see in the 10th chapter, 11th chapter, is it? He shows him the universal form, and he sees all the these different manifestations of the Krishna. In the 10th chapter also, Krishna is explaining many things about himself to Arjuna. So then by the end of this appearance, Krishna explains, then by the end of the appearance of the universal form, Arjuna starts to get an understanding. Even the 10th chapter, Arjuna is getting a good understanding of who Krishna is. So therefore he understands by the end of the Gita that he doesn't question anything Krishna says. He just says Karashe Vachnam Tava. Because if Arjuna had some doubt about, because before he's addressing Krishna as his friend, or "Hey Sakha," this thing, that thing. He's a very, very friendly address with Krishna. Yet Krishna's purpose there was to teach the absolute truth to Arjuna, to actually have Arjuna to surrender and to be an instrument in killing all these persons on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Because Krishna's purpose there at Kurukshetra was to eliminate the miscreant Kshatriyas, to remove them from the planet of the earth, because they were creating a burden on the earth and they were actually irreligious. Yet Arjuna couldn't have done that unless he accepted that Krishna was the Supreme Personality of Godhead, without a doubt. And that's Krishna was trying to get him to see that this is my position, this is your position, there's such a great, vast difference there. You need to accept who I am without any doubt. So that was Krishna's purpose. And we see at the end of the Gita that Arjuna, he said, "Kalashe Vachanam Tava," whatever you say, that's what I'll do. No question, no doubt, no lingering, well, maybe, or this, or maybe that, but if I do this, because we see in the beginning of the Gita, Arjuna's trying to rationalize with Krishna and say to Krishna, "Well, but if I kill these people, then there'll be no one to protect womanhood, then because the womanhood is protected, irreligion will come, and then Varnashankara will be the result." He's sort of trying to rationalize his actions to Krishna, and trying to say to Krishna, "Well, your instructions aren't the best thing, because I know something better." it ultimately. And then we see that through the Gita, then Krishna just explains to Arjuna. First off, he says, actually, you don't know what you're talking about. Same thing he's doing here. You see, he says, you know, he doesn't start to say, well, I'm the Supreme Person of God. He says, no, actually, you guys don't know what you're talking about. You're presenting yourself as being viparous, but actually you're not that learned. Because you're saying, who am I? Can't you see that who I am? You know, even though Krishna's appearing in this amazing form as a swan. And Krishna appears in so many amazing forms. He comes as a turtle, he comes as a fish, he comes as a half man, half lion. And actually, Prahlada Maharaj says in the seventh canto that Krishna appears in all species of life. There's even an anti-incarnation of Krishna. All the 8,400,000 species of life, Krishna appears. And they're all extraordinary, all wonderful. But he has different purposes in different incarnations. You know, here we see in the Gita that Krishna appeared. He says, Paratanaya Saranam Vinishchaya Dharma Sanastapanathaya Sambhavati, to deliver the pious knowledge, as well as to re-establish the principles of religion. So Krishna came to present religious principles. But he needed to establish to Arjuna clearly what was his position. So the same thing he's doing here. He's clearly establishing to the Kumaras, because they're the ones who, you know, Brahma was okay. He accepted that Krishna was the Supreme Person of God, but the Kumaras, they wanted to know what was the ultimate goal of life, the ultimate goal of yoga. But in order for them to clearly accept Krishna's position and Krishna's instructions, he had to strip away all their misconceptions. You know, so they could actually see that, yes, this is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And what he says is the absolute truth, therefore we have to accept. Because also we understand that previously the Kumaras, they did have some impersonalistic tendencies. And Krishna, in a previous verse, he also defeats that impersonalistic concept. Because we see, you know, it is an interesting notion that the impersonalists follow, in that they feel that it's all one. That, you know, you and I are the same. You know, we're the same, you know, expanded from the all, you know, I'm God, you're God, it's all the same. So if that is actually their concept, then why do they need to inquire from someone about knowledge? Because if you're the same as me, why should I ask you? Because you can't give me anything different than I already know. So their logic or their philosophy is self-defeating. And we see there's an interesting book by Bhaktivinoda Thakur called Tattva Viveka. Three books. There's Amnaya Sutra, and I think the third one's called Amnaya Viveka or something like that, and then the third one's called Tattva Viveka. And in Tattva Viveka, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he takes all these various philosophies, and based on what they're presenting, he defeats the philosophy. You know, because actually, you know, this impersonalistic or Mayavadi philosophy, impersonalism, Mayavadi Buddhism, is all the same thing, you know, ultimately. They're saying that we're all the same. We're all one. Ultimately, we're all God. You know, and then he points out that, and Prabhupada makes the same point, that if we all are God, then when one of us achieves liberation, why don't we all homogenize and achieve liberation at the same point? Because if we're all the same, how could it be that one part is achieving liberation and the other parts are not? I don't know if you follow that, but it's very, their presentation, just based on logic, is very illogical. It makes no sense whatsoever. You know, so Krishna's pointing out this to the Kumaras, that if you think that you're the same as me, then your query, who are you, is also meaningless, because, you know, we're all the same thing, so why bother asking from me anything? You know, so he goes on and explains like that. So it's very interesting the way it unfolds. A few other interesting points. So in the previous verse, he's explaining also that everything is an expansion of his potencies, and he's not different. So he's trying to also, you know, like he's getting the point now of establishing, like in the first two verses, 22 and 23, he's establishing this is, you know, I'm not a jiva, and I'm not the body. And in the next verse, he's starting to explain his actual identity. Not, you know, it's not that we're all the same. I'm the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And but not that I'm separate from everything. Everything's an expansion from me. So we see there's a progression of what Krishna's explaining. It's not that he just, you know, starts going straight into this verse here, but he actually has to basically he's testing the intelligence of the Kumaras by pointing out, you know, contradictions in their questions, saying, well, you know, you asked this question, but it's got all these flaws in it. Just like we see, you know, Sarvabhaum Bhattacharya, some pundit composed 100 prayers in glorification of Ganga. What was his name? Keshav Kashmiri, was it? Yeah. He composed 100 prayers in glorification of the Ganga. And Lord Chaitanya, he was able to point out, even though he composed 100, I think there were couplets, like two-line prayers, just on the fly, just composed them all. And Lord Chaitanya, he remembered them all. And he pointed out all the errors. And he was quite shocked that Lord Chaitanya was able to do that. And that it revealed, you know, to him that actually, you know, it took him some time. He didn't immediately realize, but he, you know, Mother Saraswati appeared in a dream to him and explained that to him. But then he actually realized the superior nature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, or Lord Chaitanya as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And so in the same way here, that Krishna is helping the Kumaras to understand their position, but also his position, so that he, you know, he's, because what he's going to explain to them is the absolute truth, the highest knowledge. And if one's not completely ready to receive that knowledge, then they're just wasting their time. Because in order to gain the conclusion, because they're wanting to find out, how is it that I can not, you know, I can separate the senses from the sense objects? How can I stop this cycle going on so I can actually, you know, achieve the perfection of life? So that takes a serious endeavor. That takes serious focus. One needs to be able to give up the false bodily concept of life. And this starts, as he's saying in this verse, because they have this concept of the material mind. Because he says here, you know, the mind has a natural proclivity to enter into the material sense objects. He's talking about the material mind. And as long as we think, you know, that I'm the body, as long as we're thinking that the mind is there to enjoy the senses or the sense objects, then we're going to act in that way. So Krishna is directing the Kumaras to be able to remove themselves from this type of consciousness, to distance themselves and to see that I'm not the mind, I'm not the body, I'm not the intelligence, but I'm the spirit soul. So we see as the instructions develop, then that's the way he will explain it to them. So I'll just read some of the purport. It's quite a lengthy purport. Lord Krishna, in the form of Hansa Avatar, on the pretext of finding contradictions in the simple inquiry of the sons of Brahma, who are you, is actually preparing to teach the sages perfect spiritual knowledge. But only after first rejecting two false concepts of life, namely, that the living entities are the same in all respects, and the living entity is identical with his outward or subtle body. So we see in the first two verses, when he starts to answer, he defeats these two misconceptions. You're not the body, and you know, we're not all one. And these are, you know, like these are basic misconceptions that most people have. You know, is either they have a very materialistic philosophy, or if they think they're somewhat, you know, philosophers or spiritualists, what do they come up with? You're all one. Actually, it was interesting. My wife was at a health food shop yesterday getting some things, and she was asking a few questions, and this fellow was speaking about some, you know, like healing modality, and then he's saying, oh, isn't it so wonderful how we're all one? You know, they just all have that, like, as soon as they start to think they're a little bit spiritual, and you see, like, all these new age spiritualists, their conclusion is we're all one. And it's so, you know, this Mayavadi philosophy is so prevalent in the West these days. Not in the same way as you find Mayavadi philosophy in India. They actually have a philosophy there, even though we don't agree with it. They actually do have a philosophy, but in the West it's kind of very New Agey sort of feel good kind of thing. You know? But you know, this Mayavadi philosophy is so prevalent, and as long as one has this Mayavadi philosophy, they cannot understand the absolute truth. They cannot actually achieve the goal of life. You know, this will restrict us from doing that. So Krishna, straight off, he defeats these two very prevalent philosophies, and very simply. You see how easily he just you know, of course, because the Kumaras are intelligent, he's able to defeat these things very simply. With less intelligent persons like today's modern Mayavadis, it would take quite a lot of endeavour to defeat their Mayavadi philosophy, because they're not very intelligent. And they're not actually very philosophical. But if someone actually has a philosophical approach or understanding, or has a logical mind, then you can very easily explain these things to them if you know the art of logic or how to present philosophy. But someone who doesn't, it's very difficult. It's just like yesterday, I had an experience. I went outside to get something, and I opened the screen door, and a bird flew into the house. And, you know, I was trying to guide the bird out the door, but it was just like, you know, flying, banging into the mirror, banging into this, banging into that, all over the place, because it was just terrified and not much intelligence, you know. And even though I was trying to sort of like, you know, put my arms up and direct it towards the door, it was like flying around and banging this and banging that, because it's not very intelligent. So for it to get out the house on its own, very, very difficult. Or for someone to guide it out the house, very, very difficult. And it's explained like that, you know, so I actually had to catch it, and then, you know, gave me this opportunity to chant to it, and I put it outside. But it's also explained in the Bhagavatam, is Matiya Krishna Paratosvatova Mitobi Bhatyatrikriha Pratana Madantagobi Vishatanta Misham Puna Punas Chavita Chavana Anam. The persons who think that sense gratification is the aim of life, Matiya Krishna, they'll never know Krishna. Paratosvatova, not by their own endeavours, by the endeavour of others, or by a combination of both. Because they're so addicted to this concept of trying to enjoy their senses, they think this is the goal of life. And as long as they have that conviction or that purpose, they'll never know Krishna. Matiya Krishna Parato. They'll never. It's just not possible. Because they have wrong conclusions. So the first thing is you have to defeat people's conclusions. Otherwise they'll never actually achieve the goal of life. Lord Krishna now answers the difficult question that puzzled even Lord Brahma. According to Srila Vishnudas Chakravarti Thakur, the sons of Lord Brahma were thinking as follows. Our dear Lord, if it is indeed true that we are unintelligent, still your Lordship has stated that you are actually everything, because everything is the expansion of your potency. Therefore, you are also the mind and the sense objects, which are the subject matter of our question. The material sense objects always enter into the functions of the mind. And similarly, the mind always enters into the material sense objects. And see, this is the point that's being presented here. If we have a material consciousness thinking that, you know, I am the controller, I am the enjoyer, all these things that Krishna talks about in the Gita, then naturally our mind is going to be looking for sense objects. And when we have this connection, the sense objects with the mind, even when the sense objects themselves are not present, you'll be thinking about them. I mean, how many times do you dream about sense objects when you're sleeping? They just come in because they're already mind. The mind is attached to these things. And Krishna explains in the 6th chapter of the Gita that the mind that is engaged in sense objects is the worst enemy. Because why? Because it's constantly dwelling upon these things. And these things are constantly coming into your mind, coming into your consciousness, and you're always thinking about them. And while you're thinking about them, what happens? We don't think about Krishna. Krishna says, you know, the two prime principles of devotional service are smartavya satatam Vishnu, vishmatavna jatachit. To always think of Krishna, never forget him. And he says, sava vidinisedeshu etiorevikinkara. That all the rules and regulations simply serve this purpose. The rules and regulations are there to assist us in remembering Krishna and not forgetting him. That's the whole purpose behind them. So if we're always, you know, like trying to contact the senses with the sense objects, and the mind is trying to work out how to do that, and the mind is meditating upon these things, then we're not going to think of Krishna. So Krishna explains that mind that is engaged in service of the senses is the worst enemy. But mind that is engaged in remembering Krishna is the best friend. So Krishna gives us the clue how to overcome the material mind is by using the mind to think of Krishna, by using the mind to serve Krishna, by using the mind to think, okay, how can I do this and how can I do that? How can I connect with Krishna? That's the purpose here. Thus, it is proper that we inquire from your lordship about the process by which the sense objects will no longer enter the mind and the mind will no longer enter the sense objects. Please be merciful and give us the answer. The Lord answers as follows. My dear sons, it is a fact that the mind enters into the material sense objects and the sense objects into the mind. Thus, although the living entity is actually part and parcel of me, being as I am also eternally conscious, and although the eternal form of the living entity is spiritual, in conditioned life, the living entity artificially imposes upon himself the mind and sense objects, which act as covering designations of the eternal soul. You see how that works? Because we're dwelling upon the objects of the senses, because the mind is always focusing on this, and we think the senses, this is how I enjoy life. Through the senses, I connect with the sense objects, therefore I enjoy it. This is a false designation. It forces us to accept, because, you know, in this position, in the material position, we think that the body is basically me, and my experience with the world is through the senses. Therefore, this is me. This is how I enjoy it, because of a false designation, upadi. But we have to give up these upadis, as Narad Muni points out, by engaging the senses in the service of Krishna. When our position of using our senses becomes service, when we're using our senses for whom they're meant to be used for, because he's the proprietor, Krishna's the proprietor, this is our natural position, then we give up all the false designations. But if we're trying to use the senses to enjoy, this is an unnatural position, therefore we're in illusion. So it's a very simple thing. And that's why the process of devotional service is so effective in this age. Because people are actually sumanda. They're less intelligent. That's the reality. Don't think you're intelligent. We're actually less intelligent. Prabhupada would sometimes say, with our pea-like brain, what can we understand? You know, Lord Brahma, he's very intelligent. Even the Kumaras, they're very intelligent, but Krishna's telling them they're not so intelligent. And what's our intelligence in comparison to the Kumaras? Do you think that if Krishna appeared in front of you as a swan, you'd understand that it was Krishna? Or if he appeared in front of you in any form, yeah, do you think that you'd understand that was Krishna? We're not that intelligent. Yeah. Brahma understood, but the others don't. So we don't think that we're excessively intelligent, or we don't think we're that intelligent at all, but understand that actually, no, I need to follow these instructions. I need to use my senses to serve Krishna. And in that way, I'll overcome this desire to use my senses to enjoy, and then I'll actually understand who I am. You know, I'll become free from all these false designations. I'll understand that I'm actually Krishna's eternal servant. Since it is the natural function of the material mind and sense objects to mutually interact, how can you possibly endeavor to prevent such a mutual attraction? So he's saying here, you can't stop it. Because if you have a material mind, it naturally wants to connect with the senses or the sense objects. They interact. That's the function. So we have to give up this material consciousness, and which he uses this word cheta, which, as I'm saying, it also means consciousness, not just like the subtle entity of the mind, but it also means the consciousness. So we need to change consciousness. Since both the material mind and sense objects are useless, they both should be completely given up. And thus, automatically, you'll be freed from material duality. That's the thing. As long as we have this material mind, as long as we think the mind, you know, as long as the mind is being utilized to contact the sense objects, to dwell on the sense objects, it will cause us confusion. It will cause us problems. But as soon as we give this up, the problem is solved. Srila Sridhar Swami points out that the symptoms of the material mind is the tendency to consider oneself to be the ultimate doer and enjoyer. And Krishna, he makes the same point. That, you know, if you don't act according to my instructions but act out of false ego, thinking yourself the doer, you'll be lost. So, he, you know, Krishna's instructing that, you know, this is in the 18th chapter of this verse, Krishna's instructing Arjuna all the way through the actual position of the living entity, that you're just a jiva soul inside the body, part and parcel of me. Your position is to serve me. But as long as you're thinking you're the controller, you're the doer, prakriti kriyamana ne gunai kamani savasha, as long as you think you're the doer, because you're bewildered by the influence of false ego, you will act in this way. But if you understand my instructions, if you listen to my instructions, and that's the thing he's saying to them here, is, you know, hear what I'm saying to you, because this is the absolute truth. This is the reality. You know, we may think so many other things are reality, like my job, my house, my car, my this, my that. This is reality. But no, this is part of the illusion. The reality is that we are not this body. We are spirit soul, eternal servants of Krishna, and we need to give up this connection with the body. Not that we, you know, go commit suicide or something. We need to give up this false connection, thinking that I'm the controller, thinking that I'm the enjoyer, and understand this is actually Krishna's position, and I'm simply his servant. Naturally, one with such a puffed up mentality is helplessly attracted by the sense objects. One who considers himself to be the doer and enjoyer will be irresistibly, notice that, irresistibly, you can't resist it, attracted to the means for attaining sense gratification and false prestige, namely exploitation of material objects. That's what's going on in this world. We're all trying to exploit the resources of material nature. Krishna also says this in the Bhagavad Gita. Purushaha prakriti bhunkti prakriti janagaram karanam gunasangasa sarasad jani jambasu. He said, because they're trying to exploit the resources of material nature, what happens to them? Sarasad jani jambasu. They're forced into various auspicious and inauspicious species of life. This is what causes us to take repeated births. It's because we're trying to exploit the resources of material nature. We're trying to manipulate the material energy. This forces us. So we've got to give this up. If we can give this up, then we'll be well and truly on the path back home to Godhead. Enjoy it. Will be irresistibly attracted to the means for attaining sense gratification and false prestige, namely exploitation of material objects. Above the material mind, however, is intelligence, which can perceive the existence of the eternal spirit soul. But only if it's situated in goodness. If the intelligence is situated in passion and ignorance, you cannot perceive it. That's why cultivation of goodness is so important. Knowledge is so, you know, spirit, transcendental knowledge is so important, because it helps to situate us in goodness so we can perceive the existence of the soul, and then from that we can actually go to the platform of transcendental goodness. And so it's a very, you know, there's a very systematic, logical process, and if we follow the process, we will achieve the goal without a doubt. Krishna says that to Arjuna. Asangsayam samagram. He says that in the 7th chapter of the Gita. Without a doubt, you'll achieve me. It is not possible to separate the material mind from sense objects, because they naturally exist together. Therefore, by intelligence, one must realize one's eternal form as spirit soul, part and parcel of the Lord, and completely reject the bogus material mentality. One who revives his original spiritual mentality becomes automatically detached from material attraction. Therefore, one should cultivate knowledge of the falsity of sense gratification. When the mind or senses are attracted to material enjoyment, the superior intelligence must immediately detect such illusion. In this way, one should purify one's mentality. By devotional service to the Lord, such detachment and intelligence automatically awaken, and by full understanding of one's original spiritual form, one is properly situated in eternal consciousness. Any questions at all? I have to end early today because I've got a doctor's appointment. Any questions? Okay. So we all accept the conclusions of the Bhagavatam. Not an easy path, is it? Okay. Grantarachva Bhagavatamaki. Samaveta Bhaktavindiki Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai Nitai Gopremanandi.